Blog Talk Radio.
Absolutely joyous that we find that those atmospheres in our lodges. Thank you. I know. Sometimes this music is just, I just wanted to sit back like you do and relax. My cappuccino today. Poetry, eh? Poetry is literary work in which special intensity is given to the expression of feelings and ideas by the use of distinctive style and rhythm. Why poetry? Well, I can't answer that question for you entirely. Wouldn't do that. Mine began as curiosity. After I was put through the awkwardness of memory work in when I was a little boy, nothing was really explained, like many of us, I think. Nothing was really explained about the nature of poetry or more of the artistry of poetry. It was simply one of many disconnected tasks. And it was the failing of a very sad time in education. But curiosity is what it is, and eventually, when you sit in a theater and you're listening to Shakespeare, it sort of occurs to you. It occurs to you. Or it did to me. I began to look at themes, and then, in Masonic terms, the one nice thing about being a Mason is that we can study and follow up on things without being creepy about it. You can imagine a man my age, and the neighbors discover that I'm reading and writing philosophy and history and poetry. They're going to think, this is unusual. Maybe he's having a little bit of oxygen deprivation. Not to mention wandering around in his backyard in his bedroom slippers. No, I'm still waiting for the joy of being able to do that. No, there is purpose to it. And I began, I was thinking that, feeling quite isolated. Nobody around me was indulging. So this is, in a sense, that indulgence. What do you, how do you indulge yourself? Do you consider yourself valuable enough to explore? What are your tastes about? Well, if you don't have any, then you've been saving the best for now. Explore them. That curiosity when you're alone. What satisfies you? I don't mean to insult the people that walk around with a preconceived notion of what satisfies them. No, I apologize here. I'm really speaking to the person that hasn't explored every taste in wine or brandy or art gallery or music or a walk at different seasons through the woods, across the sand. Or sailed in a storm that is gripping, or has faced down the barrel of a gun. Not things that really necessarily all want to remember, but the theme here that I picked up, you know, that notion of intensity, expression of emotion, yeah. Expression of feelings and ideas. Listen to this one. This is by a Mason from the builder, Anamosa, Iowa, November 1915. Right. Pre-war. It's called In Fellowship, and it's written by C.M. Battelle, or Battelli. And I don't think, unlike some of the stuff that's just childishly awkward, I find this is a bit more. Yeah, it overstates, but in, I think, an interesting kind of a way. And it's a tight little piece. My foot to thy foot, however thy foot may stray, thy path to my path, however dark the way. My knee to thy knee, whatever be thy prayer, thy plea to my plea, in every need and care, my breast to thy breast, in every doubt or hope, the silence mine, whatever thy secret scope, my strength is thy strength, whenever thou shalt call, strong arms stretch love's length through darkness toward thy fall. My words shall follow thee, kindly, warning, fond, through life, through drear death, and all that lies beyond. Now, Masons will have a sense of what this fellow is talking about, but what emotion? What is the emotion? What is the intensity of the thinker that wrote this? What's his state of mind? Is it that, is it just that indifference? Of course, that in a sense, I'm in every way, I'm going to be there for you. Or is it something more? Is this a plea that, is he trying to convince me and you as listeners, or is he trying to convince himself? This kind of a person, you know, to have somebody around like this would be a nuisance. My goodness, getting underfoot. But something about this poem, My Foot to Thy Foot, something about it is comforting. It's like an acknowledgement. And somebody gets it. And would I assume that this person is going to be everything to everybody? No. But when it came down to it, I would expect these principles, the value of this is a, for me, this is an expression of what? Of fraternity? Or is this about the man's expression of his sincerity with obligation? What do you think? Two of my favorite performers, I'm nostalgic and I get to be, Ella and Louis Armstrong.
Oh, will you never let me be? Oh, will you never set me free? The ties that bound us are still around us. There's no escape that I can see. And still those little things remain. A cigarette that bears a lipstick's traces, an airline ticket to romantic places, and still my heart is weak. These foolish things remind me of you. A tinkling piano in the next apartment. Those stumbling words that told you what my heart meant. A fairground's painted flames. These foolish things remind me of you.
Sounds it, the yielded friend.
sky of midnight trains and empty stations.
That takes us back quite a ways, quite a ways. Hmm? That's just that kind of day. I promised you that we would be looking at revealing or talking about a history that fills in some of the gaps. And we're continuing on. Where it matters. That sense that I was taught that all around me in the Masonic environment was somehow uniform. And I discovered, apart from a pretty interesting structure, there are hundreds of variations on the theme. Grand Lodge is experimenting, translating in their own way the ethics, the values, the practices of Masonry in their jurisdiction, and being pretty clear. So it's important to maintain and not to falter, not to re-examine. And yet, that thinking has been in so many ways left behind. Oh, it's not to dismiss the nobility of intent. No, nothing like that. But as an organization that does profess to be influential and to take the human condition as its raw material, we are prone to discovery, understanding, enlightenment. Yeah. So just when we make a discovery today, there's always something else. Always. That's the joy. And by this, the writer is helping us to get to the end of the 17th century. What could we possibly learn from that period about our history that would have any bearing on us today? By the 1690s, let me tell you, if not earlier, the Dundee Lodge had fallen on hard times. Remember, we were following the records of left by the lodge in Dundee, the exact records about that transition from operative to speculative Mason followed carefully, and not just signed off as we see today, but with an understanding. Out of economic necessity, it became quite straightforward to admit non-craftsmen to membership. Much the same, man. You can imagine the debate that happened in Lodge with that. Are you kidding? They don't have anything to offer. You're just there to get their dues. That process was undoubtedly related to what happened as the town sank from a once prosperous East Coast shipping port to an increasingly impoverished community, threatened with civil disturbance. Lots of parallels for a boy from an island like me. Its decline accelerated with the sacking of Dundee by a parliamentary army in 1651 and continued throughout the last decades of the 17th century as the Atlantic trade and western ports grew in importance. In the 1690s, famine hit the area. The pattern of decline was reversed only slowly in the past decades of the 18th century with the growth of the linen and clothing industry. Thus, in the period where we can observe firsthand the transformation of a trade guild into a gentleman's fraternity, all but the richest of Dundee's inhabitants negotiated with poverty and with ye decaying state of ye burg. a town with a declining population of approximately 6,000. Dundee possessed about a dozen guilds of tradesmen, all strictly arranged by rank and status. The cloth dyers were last in social rank. The masons, coopers, barbers, wrights, and periwig makers were considerably sufficiently skilled to be organized in a cooperative association separate from the other, the less skilled trades. By the 1690s, none of these craftsmen could have been significantly prosperous. Local merchants were also organized in their own guild, which enjoyed near monopolistic political power in the town. By the 1720s, the Masons contributed to it without being permitted to join. Too many parallels to even get bothered with right now. Eh? In 1749, the Mason applied for admission to the Merchants Guild, but he was objected to because of exercising a handicraft. He cannot be admitted a member of the guildry except he give over working as a tradesman, being contrary to several acts of Parliament. Ironically, that same tradesman would have socialized with merchants in his lodge to this date. In the world of any 18th century European town or city, rank or status was everywhere palpable. As they evolved in Britain, the Masonic lodges of this period reflected those realities, in one sense mitigating them, in another, through conviviality and the rhetoric of harmony and fraternity, obscuring and hence reinforcing them. This happened in Dundee, and it will be argued everywhere else that lodges came to exist. Yet it is worth remembering that social differences in Britain were not as rigidly codified and protected by law as they were in many parts of continental Europe. In the Dundee Masons Guild, we can observe some of the circumstances under which non-Masons were admitted to the craft of working Masons. This entry, dated 1700, links the dues to be collected from strangers for the needs of decayed brethren and their widows. Now, as I read through that, I should pass that on to you. Do you read into it as something far and distant? Or as a recurring theme? Do you share with me that sense that we seem to be recycling, we seem to be going through these events, reliving them in our communities, in our culture, social status, the gentry, the devaluation of the trades? It's been hard to get over that. And I know I'm not alone in the world. A boy that started off in the trades as my father and his father and his father. No, I didn't farm and I didn't fish and I wasn't a shipbuilder, but nevertheless, I was taught to work with my hands. And then went on to earn my education. And all the degrees and the accolades that go with that and to teach and things like that. But the parallels... I don't call it progress. I call that human nature, the struggle. Here. We'll come back to that. Masonry, though, helps obscure that, the differences, helps to blend them, and not in terms of what a person does, but what a person is, their potential. see that we're coming to the end of this program again, and sadly, I'll say goodbye. I look forward to having you join us again in just a week, and I hope this has been worthwhile. It certainly has for us. We're conscious in a way that we refer to today as a meaningful mindset. We're aware of what's going on around us. And it's like masonry gives us values so that we no longer have to walk around living in fear, avoiding, voting for that person because I'm afraid of that person. Yeah, a lot of people seem to have that mindset. Masonry, it isn't a contradiction. It's more an affirmation. You deal with whatever comes. But be true to yourself. Yeah? And nobody makes you do that. It's like, ask yourself, why don't I live that? Why don't I do that? Are all these values easy? They take a bit of time and dedication to learn, but the rewards, well, that's for you to experience. If you choose to ignore it, well, so be it. You know? But I think you are already along that path. So thank you very much for wherever you are. And I'll talk to you again soon. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness.